DeJuan thought about lobbing inside. It's all covered up. Finds KJ. Left side on Marco. And now a whistle. And what's the call? They're going to put it on Hunter Dickinson.
Here's the technical.
And Bill Self just got teed up by Marcus Pettigrew.
He's going to get kicked out. Yeah, Braden Tilley just kicked him out.
Two technicals on Bill Self. Self, very a long, lonely walk back toward the tunnel as Tech fans wave goodbye.
And not a good night for the Kansas Jayhawks, as we predicted yesterday on the show. It was going to be a tough, tough matchup for KU. We figured Kevin McCullough wouldn't play. DeJuan Harris with a sprained ankle. He did play last night, and Bill Self gets ejected. There late in the game, Texas Tech rolls to a 79-50 win over number 6 Kansas in Lubbock. KU now 1-5 on the road in the Big 12. They're 7-5 now in the conference play, and their chances of winning a Big 12 championship are dwindling by the day. Red Raiders led early 12-4. KU tied the game at 12, and then Tech put together a 15-2 spurt, went on to lead by 9 at half, and go on to lead big in the second half and go on to win it comfortably by 29. No Kevin McCullough. Hunter Dickinson did not play well last night. KJ Adams did not shoot the ball well. DeJuan Harris was hobbled, as we mentioned. And Dickinson, Adams, and Harris combined to shoot just 5 of 30. That's not going to work, especially without McCullough. Johnny Furphy, Nick Timberlake scored 13. They had their moments, but not enough to carry the team. Darian Williams, perfect 12 of 12 from the floor, 4 of 4 from 3, 2 of 2 from the line. He had 30. And Kansas only scores 50, and Texas Tech wins. So Texas Tech now 7-4, and they don't have to go on the return trip to Lawrence because of the unbalanced schedule. So a big one there. Bill Self addressing getting ejected in the ball game last night.
DeJuan thought about
wrong cut. Let's try this again.
My perspective was that I didn't curse him. I didn't yell, but I did say a magic word, I guess. Multiple times, they've got me a couple of technicals. I really wasn't trying to get thrown out, but the way things went the game, I honestly feel the game's not being called the way it needs to be called. Regardless if it's our favor, their favor, makes no difference to me. I don't feel like the game's being officiated the way it's intended to be officiated. So that was frustration, but I felt that all year. So and good officials. Good officials. It's just, I just don't see it the same way that it's being called at home.
Is that something that you're talking with other head coaches in the conference?
No, I don't do that. I don't bitch and complain to other people about that stuff. To me, that's at league level.
So that's just kind of a extenuating frustration from Bill Self on the officiating, and I think he speaks for a lot of fans as well. I mean, I officiating is not easy. There's no doubt about it. And I think it's even harder at that level, how physical the game is. And if you call one inside when guys are fighting for position, then you're supposed to call them all. And if you call them all, here's what we're going to have. We're going to have both teams in the bonus with 15 minutes to go in the first half. That's how physical the game is. So I don't know what officials are supposed to do differently. I don't know what the answer is. You know, for me, I listen to Bill Self. I hear Jerome Tang. I hear... You know, a lot of coaches in the Big 12 and coaches across the country complain about officiating or bellyache about it or not happy with it. I guess my question is, what's your solution? Because I don't know how you make it significantly better, because no matter what they call, coaches get all over the guys, so they can't win no matter what they call. They're being told by the league office, you got to crack down on coaches getting out of the coaching box, so you do that and you get vilified by everybody when you throw out Scott Drew. When he gets a second technical for being way outside the box, and the Big 12 tells you you're supposed to enforce it, and then people say that's the wrong thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a tough, tough job, man. It's a tough, tough job. And, I love Bill Self. I respect Bill Self. He's not making their job any easier with these comments.
And Jerome Tang didn't earlier this year, but, I
understand the frustration.
I don't disagree with either one of them either, right?
I don't either, but I guess my question is, we just bitch and complain until our dreams come true. There's a line I play on the radio from time to time. Complain until your dreams come true. If you don't have a solution, which I don't know. All I hear is, well, just need to call it consistently. Well, your version of consistently is way different than Jerome Tang's version of consistently. I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
You want more physical play to be called in the post. Okay. Then the other coach says, I want more hand checks called out front. Mm-hmm. I mean, next thing you know, we're calling everything. And if we call everything, ladies and gentlemen, you might as well call it the Knights of Columbus free throw contest. Because that's what it'll become.
Yeah.
And there are no, it's not quarters, it's halves. So you're going to be in the bonus way early. And then people are going to complain about the rhythm of the game, the flow of the game. People are going to complain about, I didn't come to watch a free throw contest. I didn't pay money to sit and watch a free throw contest. Then when fouls aren't called, you complain they're not called. Well, which do you want? What's the solution? I don't fully, truly know.
I think that's.
The game is so physical. It is so fast. The athletes are better than maybe they've ever been before. And I will say the mistake happened a long time ago. The genie's out of the box and out of the bottle. And that was when you started allowing physical play and you didn't clean it up a long time ago. It's hard to clean it up now. Can it be done? Yes, it could be. But until all of the officials for every single league get together and unify and say, we are calling everything to the letter of the law, it will not change.
You're not trying to fix it at this time of year either and start calling fouls on all the physicality inside. You're not going to do that during the late part of the Big 12, mid to late part of the Big 12 season. I think that's the biggest problem in men's basketball right now is the fact that they're playing two halves with this issue.
Yeah.
Because officials don't want to have a free throw contest. No. They don't want to be sitting there and having seven fouls with 5 minutes into the game and then 7 minutes into the game, and now you're shooting double bonus for 13 minutes. And so...
And you hesitate to call a foul because you don't want it to be that way, but then you get yelled at because you didn't call a foul because it is a foul and it's physical, but yet people don't want free throw contact.
Yeah, and then you add on top of the fact that the game is being coached to play it physical because they know they can do that.
Right.
So,
which goes back to allowing it way back.
It's like your post players are being coached to be physical.
Sure.
They're not saying, hey, can't do this. They're saying, yeah, you can do this because they're not going to call it. And so the way you coach changes based on what you're able to get away with and what you're allowed to do at it and in any sport at any level.
Yes.
It's the way it's coached. And so they're too far with it, but I don't disagree. I don't know how you fix it. You got to fix it at the beginning of the year and do that point of emphasis thing.
Yes.
And start calling those fouls or you fix it by getting rid of two halves and going to quarters. That would help tremendously.
Wouldn't fix it, but it would help. Yeah.
I mean, you get to five at 1 minute left in the quarter maybe instead of
games would go quicker.
Seven at 5 minutes into the game.
That's less advertised inventory for ESPN and Fox, and that ain't going to happen.
Exactly. We've been over that.
Yes, we have. Tough Caesar and Josh Heiler, West Virginia, continued. They fell to TCU and Fort Worth 81-65. Tonight, the three Big 12 games on the docket, Iowa State number 10. A lot of people overlooking them to win the Big 12. They're at Cincinnati at 6 o'clock tonight. Number 25, Oklahoma travels number 12, Baylor at 8 o'clock. Number 19, BYU hosts Central Florida tonight at 8 o'clock. KU, by the way, will go to Norman to take on Oklahoma. It's probably going to need a resume-building win. And that'd be a win over a top 10 team, although I don't think Kansas is a top 10 team without McCuller at all. But they're number six right now in the rankings. And so Kansas 1-5 on the road. They go to Oklahoma on Saturday. They lose that game Saturday afternoon. They're 7-6 in conference play. You know, there's a lot of amazing numbers we throw out there, especially lately with the Chiefs. And we'll talk more about that coming up later on the show here on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. But one of the most amazing statistics when it comes to college men's basketball is that Bill Self, during his time at Kansas, has never had worse than a four seed in the NCAA tournament. And that was, I think, only once or twice. Is Kansas looking at, dare I say, a four seed or worse? Because if Kevin McCuller isn't able to come back and be effective, this team, I know it is a fantastic non-conference schedule. They got tremendous wins in the non-con. They're in the toughest conference in America. If they finish in the top four in the Big 12 or top five, I think they're guaranteed to be no worse than a four seed. And they'll probably be a seed line higher than what people think looking at their overall record because of how tough their schedule is. So maybe you think they're a four or five and end up being a three. And that would be well-deserved based on your body of work. But are we looking at Kansas going to have their worst seed ever under Bill Self going to NCAA tournament? Is that an overreaction after how bad they played on the road and last night? Are we overreacting to a bad night shooting? Nothing would fall. No Kevin McCuller, your top players, Dickinson and Adams and Harris just simply had an off night. It's a quick turnaround after emotional win on Saturday against Baylor. Are we overreacting when we say Kansas may have worse than a three or a four seed in NCAA tournament? Or is that fair when you look at this team that's 1-5 on the road, and even when they're at full strength with McCuller, they lost at Central Florida, they lost at Iowa State, which is no shame in that, and they lost at West Virginia, and we know how poor West Virginia has played this year, in this, even since that game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that an overreaction? Or
no, I don't think it's an overreaction. But and I would say the main reason it's not an overreaction is if McCullough's not healthy,
yeah,
when you get deeper in and get toward the tournament, the committee takes that into
That's
effect.
That's true, yeah.
And so if he's not 100%...
And they haven't played well without him.
Yeah, and they don't feel like KU's 100%, and they don't feel like he's going to be able to maybe get... even if he's not able to go, it's definitely not an overreaction.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if he's playing and still not healthy, then they might give the benefit of the doubt there and give them a better, you know, seed line. But they do take that into effect. If Kevin McCullough's not playing, then no, it's definitely not an overreaction to say that they should be a four or lower when they go into the tournament, because they're probably going to lose more games that way too, and then they're going to know, hey, this isn't a Kansas team that's a normal right. Kansas team.
Kansas right now is 7-5 in the Big 12, and there are three road games remaining. Oklahoma's the most winnable one because they play them this Saturday, so have some rest because they played last night.
Mm-hmm.
But then their last two road games are at Waco, and they have not done great in Waco, and then at Houston, which you know they'll be ready to go to close out the regular season. Houston may need that to win the Big 12 outright or get a share of the title. So I think if you're a KU fan right now, you're going loss at Baylor, loss at Houston. That means you're 11-7 in conference play at best. If you say those are losses right now, at best you're 11-7. That's assuming you win at Oklahoma and you go undefeated at home the rest of the way. They shouldn't have beat Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
Their home games are Texas, BYU, and K-State. And they've already lost to K-State, and BYU's a talented team. Texas has gone in the Allen and won, I think, before. So, not very often, of course. Nobody wins there very often. But you start looking at this, and you're going, dare we say Kansas could end up being a 10-8 team in conference play? I don't know if we'll go 9-9, but if you say they lose one home game and they can't win on the road, you're going to be 10-8.
Mm-hmm.
If you're 10-8, you're probably middle of the pack in the Big 12. That's probably not going to be good enough to get you better than maybe a 4 seed in NCAA tournament. You might be, dare I say it, a 5.
Yeah. And
I mean, Oklahoma game this Saturday is pretty big in regards to seed lines and thinking about the NCAA tournament. And if you still think you have a chance to win the Big 12, but I don't think they do now. But you've got to prove you can win on the road with or without Kevin McCullough. You've mm-hmm. got to prove you can win on the road. And this is by far the most winnable of the three remaining road games.
Oh, for sure.
And
yeah.
Oklahoma's
yeah.
still ranked at the top 25. That's yeah. how tough this conference is.
Yeah.
It's crazy. We could be looking at 10-8 Kansas in conference. Number one preseason team of the year. Remember what we said about the kiss of death on that one? North Carolina last year was number one team preseason and didn't even make the tournament. Now, Kansas will make the tournament unless they just absolutely collapse.
Yeah, it'd have to be a major collapse.
Right. And their name will help them move up on seed line a little bit, too. But this Kansas team is, I think they're staring a 4 seed right in the face, and that might be being pretty nice right now.
Yeah, if they can't win on the road, that's what's weird about this. Is
and they're not the only one, by the way.
Yeah,
they're not. They had a stat last night that Big 12 top 10 teams on the road in conference play against unranked teams are 3-8.
Yeah,
that's insane.
It is. But that's what's weird from the KU aspect of it is
they usually
that's
win
how they win Big 12 right. championships, right? They go on the road and win.
That's right.
And, you know, they typically, you know, most teams, Iowa State's a perfect example of it, right? They win at home.
Yeah.
And they always win at home. They've always done it. It's always just been part of their DNA. But then they go on the road and they have issues. And Iowa State is the poster child for winning at home and having issues on the road
absolutely.
Over the last 10 years.
Right.
Maybe even more in this conference.
Absolutely.
And so... You know, I put West Virginia in there since they joined. They're kind of in the same typical kind of boat, you know, when Bob Huggins had his good teams.
Sure.
But with Kansas, that's what was so aggravating about it, is they would win at home, and then they would go beat really good teams on the road
mm-hmm.
and bury you. And you didn't have a chance to come back and win the Big 12. And so that's what's kind of strange about it this year. And you know why it's happening
mm-hmm.
and understand it, but it's weird to see it happen. From an outside perspective of not being a KU fan to look at that and see that they're struggling on the road just like everybody else does, and that's not normal.
How about this? To put this in perspective, if Kansas loses at Oklahoma Saturday, which is very, very possible, the
Absolutely,
way they've been playing on the road, Oklahoma needs a pretty big win. If they lose Oklahoma on Saturday, Kansas will be more than likely 7th in the standings in the Big 12. Oklahoma would jump them. TCU, if they would win, would jump them. Kansas would be behind Houston, Iowa State, Texas Tech, Baylor, TCU, and Oklahoma. And actually would be right there, maybe even tied with BYU for seventh. That's, wow.
Yeah.
Now, and I will say it is amazing to me that Kansas was preseason number one. And I remember looking at their team and I'm thinking, I don't know if they're really number one. Their starting five is really good. But after that, I had questions. And then Arteria Morris gets dismissed from the team. That obviously hurt. And then they had the Adams kid that decided to transfer that they liked a lot, that was coming in, a high school kid. And so some things have fallen the wrong way for Kansas, no doubt about it. But it's amazing how you can go for preseason number one and beat a lot of great teams to now sitting here going, this team may go 10-8 in conference play. And it's not like this team's much different than they were early in the year. Arteria Morris was not on this team to start the year. He was during the summer when they went to Puerto Rico. This is still the same team. Furphy's actually gotten better, but they have no depth off this bench. Timberlake's been a huge disappointment. They've got, you know, Parker Brown's been serviceable. Dickinson's done his thing. Adams has played well. Harris has not played as well as they need him to play. I will say that.
Yeah.
He needs to play better, and he had been the last couple weeks. But there's just too much pressure on four guys. It's way too much. And then you take one out of the equation, look at all the pressure on the three guys last night, and they went 5 of 30. I'm not saying they're going to do that every night, but
yeah, bench thing's been an issue all year.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's not a.
I've been saying all year they're one. I've been saying all year they're one severely sprained ankle away for being a average team.
Yeah,
and here we are. McCullough's out.
Yeah, it's not that hard to figure out based on everything that's happened to lead up to this point.
It's still incredible they beat Baylor at home.
Oh yeah,
with what they had, but wow. So, Big 12 basketball, KU, Bill Self, says I had enough and got ejected. Says he didn't want to get ejected. I thought he did. I thought he was.
Seemed like he did. He was kind of smiling when he walked off the court.
It was almost like, you know what? I'm tired of watching this crap. I'm out of here.
I love the end of his comment where he says, good officials. Good officials.
Yeah, right.
You're trying to cover a fine that you're about to get here, buddy.
Right, right. I think Bill can afford it.
Yeah.
He can afford it,
but it's too late for that part of your comment, man. You've already thrown him under the bus too far to bring him back out.
Amen to that. Amen to that. All right, we're going to talk some Chiefs football come up in a little bit, but first we're going to talk local sports. There was some high school basketball last night.
Yeah, we had a few doubleheaders from the area there. Originally scheduled game between Thunder Ridge and Hill City that was a split. Thunder Ridge girls won 37-18. The Hill City boys winning 67-35. Also, Lincoln was taking on Tascadet on the road in the makeup game. Lincoln beating Tascadet girls 44-33, and the boys won also there last night by a final of 62-37. And Southeast sweeping Ellenwood last night. Southeast girls won 62-31, and the boys won 52-31. So that's a look at what happened in last night's high school basketball here from the area. Excuse me. Coming up here this evening, we do have high school basketball continuing on Katy Country 94, Z96.3 in the Bullet Trojan Channel. We have a big Northern Plains League showdown, Osborne at Sylvan Lucas, and then the NCAA Beloit is taking on Sacred Heart in a big doubleheader on Z96.3 the Lake. Pregame should be around 5:50 for both of those contests. Sylvan sometimes runs a little later, so if we're not on at 5:50, we will be on eventually. Other games are going on in the area tonight. Lakeside is hosting Lynn. Also, Pike Valley is at St. John's Tipton. Rock Hills hosts Southern Cloud. Lincoln's at Thunder Ridge. And in the non-league game, Concordia's at Phillipsburg tonight. You can always find the full schedules and results for high school hoops at ncksports.com. I'll preview Sylvan Lucas Osborne real quick, and then we'll hand it back over to Wade to preview Beloit and Sacred Heart. These are actually pretty big matchups in the Northern Plains League tonight, and I think a lot of coaches and teams are putting more of a premium on winning a Northern Plains League regular season championship since there wasn't a tournament. Mm-hmm. So there's three teams coming into tonight that are 8-0, the other 7-1. And on the girls' side, Sylvan Lucas is 8-0, Osborne 7-1 in the league. Both teams are 13-3, so Sylvan Lucas has a chance to keep themselves in good position. The other team that's undefeated in the league is St. John's Tipton, and they've already beaten Osborne as far as the league game was concerned, the one that went on the standings here this year. So Be interesting to see how that plays out tonight. This is a rematch of games that were scheduled because the NPL tournament was lost. Osborne girls did beat Sylvan Lucas the first time, 54-46 in Osborne back on January 20th. So we're looking forward to this girls game. And then on the boys side, both teams are 8-0 in the league coming into tonight's game. And Osborne's 15-1 overall. Sylvan Lucas 11-5. The Bulldogs did kind of control the game the first time the two teams met, 58-39 in Osborne, behind a career high 26 points from Dalton Garman. So, we're looking at these matchups, and they are important ones for the league race, and again, a magnified league race here this season. So we're looking forward to going down to Sylvan Grove tonight and seeing how these two play out. We'll have girls pregame around 5:50, tip-off around 6 o'clock. Again, stay tuned. If that gets pushed back, we'll have it for you. We're ready to go and have a good time tonight with high school hoops down in Sylvan Grove. Looking forward to this matchup between the Mustangs and Bulldogs tonight.
Once again, that'll be in Sylvan.
It's in Sylvan Grove, because your Osborne fans, your schedule will say that it's in Osborne, but since they put the game in Osborne on January 20th, they moved this one to Sylvan Grove. So, if you're heading to the game tonight, make sure you're heading a little further south.
Yes, that would be a good idea. You'd be disappointed.
A little bit east as well.
Right. All right, tonight on Z96.3 The Lake and KatieKench94.com, live video stream, ncksports.com, via the White Trojan Channel. Two really big basketball games for league ramifications and league title ramifications. We start with the girls game. The Blake girls have been red hot. They've won 6 in a row, 9 of their 10 here in 2024, and they have a chance to clinch a share of a league title tonight on the road at Sacred Heart. The girls beat Sacred Heart the first time around. It was a pretty good battle. Sacred Heart girls have won 6 of their last 7. Since that loss to Beloit, the Beloit girls and boys are both on 7-game winning streaks since the Orange and Black Classic tournament championship games that they lost. And both Sacred Heart teams, girls and boys, have won 6 out of 7 since losing to Beloit on January 23rd. More on the boys' game in a moment. On the girls' side, Beloit is 13-4 overall, 7-1 in league. And as I said, they can clinch a share of the league title with a win tonight. Sacred Heart is 11-6, 3-4 in league play, but they have been playing very well as of late, and head coach of Beloit, Shauna Remus, has noticed.
Sacred Heart's improving. They're playing a ton of games here, and they're winning almost all of them. And so they pack a really big punch. They've got an inside game, and then they've also got some really talented guards on the outside. So we're going to really have to guard hard and get up in their, their three-point shooters, because they kind of live and die on the three-point line. And then just continue to rebound and take care of the ball.
On the boys' side, as the girls' game will start at 6 o'clock, pregame at 5:50 tonight on Z96.3 Lake in the live video stream. So the girls' game, big one there. Sacred Heart can't win a league title, but they're playing well as of late. The girls of Beloit have a chance to get a share of the league title with the win tonight. And if they win tonight and beat Minneapolis on senior night on Friday, they will be the outright league champions. They control that if they win their next two. The boys' side, Beloit's already clinched a share of the league title. Number one team in the state, according to the KBCA rankings in 3A. They are 16-1, 8-0. In league play, but Sacred Heart could argue that you shouldn't have been, because just 21 days ago in Beloit, Sacred Heart was up 12 with 2 minutes and 22 seconds to go in the fourth quarter, and somehow, some way, Beloit came back and won it in double overtime, 88-77. Beloit scored like 59 points, it was, in the final like 10 minutes, because it was just insane. A lot of free throws were shot in that game, obviously. Sacred Heart is chomping the bit. They want another shot at Beloit. They're going to get it tonight. Sacred Heart's ranked 10th in 2A, and I think they have a legitimate chance to win 2A. I really, truly do. And if Sacred Heart had held on and won that game, tonight's game could have been really to decide the league title. Now, Sacred Heart, what they're trying to do is, put off what might seem like the inevitable. Beloit will be a heavy, heavy favorite against Minneapolis on Friday. So if Beloit loses tonight on the boys' side, if they win Friday, they're still the outright league champion. Ellsworth and Sacred Heart both have 2 league losses behind Beloit. And Ellsworth and Sacred Heart, I think, they have to play one more time against each other. So Beloit could easily lose this game and still win the league title outright. But they definitely don't want to do that, obviously. And you have to worry about sub-state seeding. And then, of course, if you can make it to state, you like to be seeded as high as you can at state, although sometimes you can get matched up against some really good teams with just a tougher schedule that has a worse record. Sometimes that could be a private school, or it could be a really good school from maybe closer to the bigger city that's a 3A school or below, or whatever the case may be. So this should be a fun game. And Ryan Eilert on the keys here in a rematch against Sacred Heart.
We've got to establish our inside game earlier. The first game, they were able to take us away from it by trapping on the perimeter and providing ball pressure. And it wasn't until later that we started getting the ball on the block where we needed to. And then defensively, we've got to be better than we were in the first game. They were able to get in the lane most of the night and kick out for open threes. And they're a team that's a little difficult for us to guard because they play five guards, and all of them can get into the lane and all of them can shoot.
Yeah, Bryce Beiser had 34 points and 13 rebounds, 15 and 16 from the line in the last matchup. Jackson Cheney came up with some big shots, and Beloit ended up coming back to win that game in double overtime, 88-77. Lance Lindane had a big three-pointer in overtime to kind of give him the lead for good. But, you know, this is not a great matchup for Beloit in regards to just what he said, is that Sacred Heart, they got a lot of guards. Mm-hmm. They can drive it. They can kick it. They can shoot it. They got very aggressive guards. Their point guard averages about 6 rebounds a game, and he was only 5'9 or 5'10. So it is a tough matchup for Beloit. Now, granted, Sacred Heart doesn't have a size to really battle with Beiser too much, so that's a mismatch for them as well. So, yeah, that's what you see. You got the size of Beloit versus the quickness and the outside shooting. But not only that, Sacred Heart just doesn't, you know, drive and kick. They can drive it all the way to the hoop. Now, you got Beiser in as a fly swatter inside, but this will be an interesting matchup tonight. If Sacred Heart's making threes, Beloit's going to have a tough game tonight. If Sacred Heart's missing threes, then and Beloit can get the ball inside, then you got to like Beloit's chances tonight. Bryce Beiser is 19 points away from 1,000 in his career, and 1,000 points in a high school basketball career is pretty doggone impressive. It also means that you probably played as a freshman, or you had three unbelievable years if you didn't play as a freshman.
Yeah.
And Bryce checks all those boxes, no doubt. So he'll be All-State 3A. If he isn't, there should be an investigation, no doubt. So there you go. Beloit boys tonight at Sacred Heart, around 7:30 on that one. Both on Z96.3 Lake with the girls and boys doubleheader and live video stream, ncksports.com with the Beloit Trojan channel. I'm excited, but it's going to be hard to match the last few.
Yeah, good luck with that.
That was the best. That was the greatest comeback I've ever called, and I've called a lot of great comebacks. I've called a lot of amazing comebacks in high school sports over the years. Really, truly have. But that one, considering the amount of time left in the opponent that Beloit was playing, undefeated, ranked 6th and 2A at the time, that's a comeback that really defies all logic.
When you did it, and I was kind of thinking in my mind, I'm like, have I ever had anything like that? And there's nothing that comes to mind about it. And if there was a game like that, it would. Mm-hmm. Right, like I've done a lot of games, and you some of them start just, you know, conglomerating, mm-hmm. going together. But if there was a game like that, I would have remembered it. So I've never done anything like that either, like a comeback. You know, there's been some exciting close games, sure. right, that you remember, and it comes down to the wire, and it comes down to the final player, maybe a big defensive play somewhere here or there, mm-hmm. football, basketball, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But, the only thing I could compare maybe would be like the Smith Center volleyball team against Inman last year. They looked like they were dead for rights and came back and won that third set and made it to the, won the pool. But,
right.
The only thing I can even come close to thinking of.
I thought
it's not. That's not even close to that.
I have a handful. I think I mentioned this before, but Centralia girls were down 15 or 16 in the state, I think, semifinal and against Norwich. But that was start of the fourth quarter. They had 8 minutes come back and win, and they did. And the Beloit boys were down 4 with about 17, 20 seconds left, and did not have the ball against Lions in a sub-state semifinal. But Lions wasn't nearly as good as Sacred Heart is. But Beloit pulled it out at the fire. Beloit was down, I think, 16. In a state game against Wellsville about in 2014, but had the whole second half to mm-hmm. come back. They were down double digits in the fourth quarter against St. Mary's in a sub-state semifinal. I think they're down double digits, about 5.5 to go. And I would say that was probably the best comeback I had seen based on how much time was left and what was on the line and what type of team they're playing until 3 weeks ago when Beloit came back from that 12-point deficit with 2:22 to play in the fourth quarter and won it in double overtime. One of the best games that I've ever had a chance to call. So you never know what's going to happen tonight.
Nope.
All right, coming up, wrestling locker room chats tonight.
We'll start all of our coverage of about 5:15, wrestling locker room chats on Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. We'll talk with the coaches of Beloit, Osborne, and Smith Center, recapping girls' regional wrestling this past weekend, and then we'll preview boys' regional wrestling coming up here this weekend as the postseason gets underway.
This is a Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. In 30 seconds, we'll hear from Patrick Mahomes, and talk about those remarkable Kansas City Chiefs, back-to-back Super Bowl champions.
I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Did you know that we sell tires? We also perform alignments and all the other services that go along with them. We handle all the top brands. Extras like road hazard warranty, complimentary tire rotations, and complimentary tire repairs are available for purchase on most tires. Right now, we are offering $80 off when you buy a set of four. Call or stop by Kiever Brothers Automotive for fast, friendly tire services today. Find us just south of the courthouse in Beloit or on the web at KieverBrothers.com.
What was the plan if the Niners opened overtime with a touchdown and then you guys answered with a touchdown? Would they have had a third possession? What were you guys going to do?
No, we were going for two. I don't know if Coach Reed won't be telling everybody, but we would have went for two for sure.
There you go. Chris Jones said that after the Super Bowl. Said the Niners are crazy for taking the ball first. Said that they had rehearsed that for 2 weeks. They had talked about this. Justin Reed talked about the overtime rules for the playoffs back in training camp, back in July and August in St. Joe, Missouri. The Niners just started to talk about it after they made the Super Bowl, which is interesting. Welcome back to Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. You know, Kyle Juszczyk, I don't know how to pronounce the last name, fullback. Juszczyk. His wife does that attire, you know, and he and Taylor Swift got that jacket, and she's definitely going to make more money because of that in her business. And somebody said that the fullback for the Niners, needs to have his wife make up a jacket that has the new overtime rules on it. Maybe that would have been a good idea to have wearing all 2 weeks in Vegas. It is pretty amazing that the Niners...
Yeah,
that is just, it's amazing that the players actually admitted that they didn't have a clue what was going on.
Yeah,
that kind of that really kind of throws your coach under the bus.
And then it's like, no wonder this guy has struggles in the Super Bowl.
Right,
can't finish.
But he's good enough to get there.
Get there, and they're good enough to be in a position to win the game three times too.
Right, it's amazing. They had double digit lead in all three of the Super Bowls that he's been a coordinator or head coach, and they've lost all three. That's remarkable, and the Chiefs are remarkable, and that was the plan. I mean, you know, and listen, I don't know if my heart could have taken it, but part of me would have loved to have seen the Chiefs win the game on a 2-point play.
Mm-hmm.
And then really make it look bad that you should not have taken the ball first. But that would have been so awesome. And that's why the Kyle Shanahan decision to take the ball first in overtime. First of all, it doesn't make sense to start with a lot, because it's just like college football to an extent. You want to know what you need. And so right away when they won the toss, and I couldn't believe they're taking the ball, I'm like, hallelujah, this is awesome for the Chiefs. And like Dan Orlovsky said, you're giving Mahomes four downs when you do that. Whereas if the Chiefs got the ball first, you know, do they have fourth and short? Do they go for it? Do they punt it? I think they would have gone for it anyway, but maybe not. Who knows? But third and one, they would have run the quarterback keep with Mahomes instead of waiting to fourth and one, as I established yesterday. A lot of people are like, well, you know, if we got fourth and one, they would have punted it. Well, first of all, they wouldn't have run Pacheco on third and one. Do you think if they knew they were going to punt, if they didn't get it on third and one, they'd take the ball out of 15's hands? No, they would have run that play on third and one. So I've heard some people say that, like, no, the play calling would be different all the way around, more than likely, had the Chiefs got the ball first. People need to understand that. But the plan was simple. And listen, we saw the Chiefs defense. It was gassed. The Niners defense was gassed too a little bit. It really behooves everybody to try to end it as soon as possible. And like somebody said yesterday, and listen, I get it. I mean, it was a fourth and four at the 9 or 10 yard line for the 49ers, and they decided to kick the field goal. But when they kicked the field goal, a lot of people, including myself, thought that's game. Chiefs are going to go down, score a touchdown. Now, in fairness, the Chiefs hadn't gone on a long touchdown drive the entire game. Seriously, they hadn't.
Yeah.
Their touchdown was off a muff punt.
Yep.
They did drive the ball down the field to get a field goal, and it was really the clock that stopped them instead of the Niners at the end of regulation. But they had not driven the length of the field against the Niners. So, you know, I'll support Kyle Shanahan a little bit, thinking, you know, listen, we get the ball first, my defense can rest a little bit. The Chiefs, if we can go down and get a touchdown, the Chiefs, you know, haven't gone a long drive all game long. I mean, I get the thinking a little bit, but at the same time, it's 15. You're playing against 15. You're playing against Mahomes. But I think the bigger thing is you're going to give him four downs instead of three. And listen, the Chiefs offense is always tough to stop with three downs. Well, maybe not so much this year. But four downs, that's insane. And the Chiefs, you know, obviously there's a few plays in this game where you say, what would have happened if this happened? So, for instance, You know, there's so many different plays of the Super Bowl. You go, oh my gosh, if this would have happened, the Chiefs would have lost. I go back. I still think one of the biggest plays of the game. Well, there's no doubt to me after the Mahomes threw the interception that that was a huge part of the game when the Chiefs got a three and out and stopped them. That was huge. And then the Chiefs kind of started to get the momentum. And we know about the muff punt and everything else. But the biggest play of this game, everybody's going to talk about the Mecole Hardman game-winning catch, or they might even talk about the third and four where the Niners at the 10, you know, they stop them and force the Niners in a field goal in overtime. Listen, the play to me that saved the Chiefs' chances of going back-to-back, the play that saved the day was made by Trent McDuffie.
Two-minute warning.
It was a two-minute warning play, right. When the Niners, the Chiefs only had two timeouts left. The Niners let the clock milk all down to 2 minutes. They had a third and four. If they convert that, they're going to milk the clock, and they're going to kick a field goal at the gun, more than likely.
Yeah, just and like the Chiefs did last year,
exactly right. That's exactly what would have happened. Now, would Moody have made it? I think he would have. But he did have an extra
that day.
He did have an extra point that was low and was blocked. So who knows? We don't know for sure. We're assuming. But I do know that the Chiefs probably wouldn't got the ball again in regulation and so forth, and more than likely the Niners would have won the game. So one play right there. If McDuffie is late getting to the quarterback, if he doesn't time it right, if he didn't get his hands on the football, because once it's deflected, you can do whatever you want to the wide receivers as a corner or a safety. And once he made that play, I even thought maybe the Niners would go for it there. And they didn't. Yeah. And I understand why they didn't.
For sure.
But they could have. Dan Campbell probably would have. But anyway, they kicked the long field goal and they made it. But then you knew the Chiefs had plenty of time to at least get three. You got a great kicker, having an amazing year. So all the Chiefs had to do is get inside probably the 40. And you got a great chance of making a 55-yarder. I mean, he made a 57-1 earlier. You would like to get inside the 30 and make it a little bit easier. And they did. Mm-hmm. But you had two timeouts, a minute 53 to go. So that was the play. I mean, if they convert a third and four, it comes down to Moody kicking probably a 35 to 40, 45-yard field goal, and maybe closer. If McDuffie does not make the play, that's what probably happens. But he makes the play, now you have a minute 53 and two timeouts. It's an eternity. That play was gigantic, absolutely gigantic. And so it goes back to what we said yesterday. Mahomes gets a lot of credit. He played great when it was crunch time. You know, Kelce came up big in the second half. Butker was awesome. Special teams were fantastic. But the real MVPs of the Chiefs all year long was their defense. And their secondary this year was sensational. And the numbers out there are pretty amazing when you look at it. The Chiefs are the only team in the history of the National Football League to beat three top four offenses and top four defenses in the playoffs. They're also one of only six teams to beat two number one seeds and a number two seed. Fewest takeaways in the regular seasons for a Super Bowl champion. The Chiefs last year had 20 takeaways. That was the previous low. This year, the Chiefs, as great as their defense was, number two in the league, only had 17 takeaways. That's the fewest takeaways in the regular season for a Super Bowl champion. However, the Chiefs in the playoffs this year had six takeaways, two in the Super Bowl. Huge, right?
Yes.
Obviously. Here's another one. Most games allowing 25 points or less in NFL history. Let me give you the list. The Seahawks, 18 games. The Steelers, 18 games twice. The Buccaneers, 18 games. The Eagles, 18 games. The Giants in 90. The Giants, 86, 18 games. The Steelers in 78, 18 games. The 2000 Ravens, 19 games. The Yellow Jackets way back in 1925, 19 games. And the Kansas City Chiefs this year, all 20 games that they played. Well, I guess it wasn't all 20. It was 20 of the 21. 20 of the 21 games they played, they allowed less than 25 points. The only game they allowed more than 25 was Green Bay. They had 27. Okay? Now, how many of those teams I just listed? That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So counting the Chiefs this year, there's 11 teams that have had 18 opponents to less than 25 in a regular season and postseason. Out of those 11, how many do you think won the Super Bowl?
Oh, man.
Really, you got to say 10 because Yellow Jackets, it wasn't Super Bowl. Like, so I'll eliminate the Yellow
Jackets. I'm going to say 7.
All 10.
All 10 of them, yeah.
All 10. The only one that didn't was the Yellow Jackets in 1925.
Yeah, it's like I wasn't sure about years and all that stuff. I would have had to
think about
all the quick math there.
The Seahawks in 13 won the Super Bowl. The Steelers in 05 and 08 won the Super Bowl. The Buccaneers in 02 with that dominant defense blew out the Raiders. Yeah. The Eagles in 01. The Giants in 86 and 90 with Parcells. 78 Steelers. The 2000 Ravens had that dominant defense. And then this year's Chiefs. The Chiefs are the first team ever to allow less than 25 points in 20 games. I mean, that's
get that 17th game on the schedule, and you
that, well, even if you took that away, they'd still have the most.
Tied
with the 2000 Ravens. The Chiefs, we said it during the playoffs, but we said it last week for the Super Bowl. The Chiefs have to get to 24 offensively, and my concern was, could they get there? Because the Niners defense I thought was pretty good. 24 was the number. 24 was the number, and they got to 25, oddly enough. Ironically enough, and they won 25-22 in overtime.
Yeah.
Wow. Super Bowl 58, which aired live Sunday on CBS, is officially the most watched program in NFL history and television history. 123.4 million average viewers across all platforms, including CBS, Paramount Plus, Nickelodeon, Univision, CBS Sports, Univision, NFL Digital Properties, NFL Plus, blah, blah, blah. The 123 million viewers top last year's Super Bowl, which is 115 million. Which held the previous record. Overall, 202.4 million viewers watched at least part of the Super Bowl broadcast, making it the highest unduplicated total audience in history, marking a 10% increase from last year's Super Bowl. Let me say it, and I'll say it again. The NFL is king. And there is nobody close.
No.
The NFL is the king. Football's king. As we saw, college football, too.
And that's why you're playing more games when players don't even want to play more games.
That's exactly right.
Right?
That's why you have expanded.
Why all this money is being put into the game.
That's why you added a playoff team on each conference, so you could have an extra playoff game as well. And then you have the Monday night playoff game, and we have Thursday night NFL football. And who knows? Pretty soon, someday, we'll probably have Wednesday night football. And
finally understood what expanding to a 12-team playoff is going to do for college football.
That's like, I've never fully understand how college never figured that part out, but... the early odds to win the Super Bowl. Niners got the earliest best odds, plus 550. So basically 5.5 to 1. The Chiefs are next, 6.5 to 1. Ravens are third. Bills are fourth. I think the Bills are gonna have major problems next year. Lions are fifth. Bengals are sixth, 12 to 1. Dolphins 17 to 1. Eagles are 20 to 1. Packers are 20 to 1, and the Cowboys are 20 to 1. Out of those picks, if you had to pick one, which do you think would be the smartest bet with your money, or maybe the biggest, best return, best chance of happening? The Texans are not on. By the way, Texans are 25 to 1. That's what I would do. And the Packers are 20 to 1 on this list. I saw 25 to 1 on another.
Yeah.
To me, the Texans and Packers would be the two teams I'd put a 20 on, maybe.
Yeah, those would be
And you can't go wrong putting money on the Chiefs, but the only thing is, it's only 6.5 to 1.
Yeah, those would be if you're trying to make money on it and trying to find the dark horse type winner, right? Like that is not the actual favorite here, but could do it, would be the Texans. And like if you see what the Packers do in the offseason, I'd definitely put it on. It's hard for me to be like, let's put it on either the 49ers or the Chiefs.
Right.
It's because it's been documented how hard it is to get back here, but the Chiefs kind of have thrown that to the side. But,
right.
I mean,
Chiefs have to get the Super Bowl three straight years, which they have not
money,
done.
Right?
Yeah. The Chiefs have not made it three straight years.
But smart money's not you can't even figure that out in the NFL now, I don't think.
No.
And the smart money would be Chiefs. But
it would be the smart money.
But it's like, can they can't do that 3 years in a row.
Well,
that's what the talk's going to be, obviously.
I'll tell you, attractive one will be the Bengals. If Joe Burrow's healthy.
Yeah, for sure.
The Bengals have $61 million in cap space, but they do have some tough decisions. T. Higgins among those. So, you know, the Bengals at 12-1 would be attractive to me. I don't want to bet on that because then I would actually kind of be cheering for the Bengals. I don't like the Bengals. But to me, you know, moving forward, this is just my opinion. But I think the two biggest challengers to the Chiefs and the AFC going forward are not the Ravens. I know they had a great year and everything. I just don't think in the playoffs they're going to get it done. You're right. The
With
Bills,
Lamar,
I'm not overly worried about the Bills. I mean, the Bills may come into Arrowhead and win again next year, or the Chiefs go to Buffalo and the Bills might blow them out. I don't care. It's all about the playoffs. But the two teams that would worry me the most, I think, are really would be Cincinnati and Houston. Those would be the two teams that I'd be most concerned about. And their quarterbacks are just unique individuals, you know. And Burrow's already beaten the Chiefs in Arrowhead in AFC title game. So I think the biggest concern would be, you know, I think a lot of Chiefs fans were more than happy that Burrow got hurt, because the Bengals didn't, even when they didn't have him, they gave the Chiefs all they could handle at Arrowhead. The Bengals match up for the Chiefs for some reason. So that I've kind of felt like the Bengals are always the team I'm worried about, not the Ravens and not the Bills. And I think the Texans are a team that's up and coming. And they got, you know, they could, if they have another good draft, they're right there. And they've got, I think, a very special and unique quarterback that can do special things. That reminds me a little bit of Mahomes in the way he handles things. So, am I missing somebody?
No,
here?
Not for this year.
Jaguars. Maybe I shouldn't overlook them. Maybe they just regressed.
And I'm not overly focused on the Jaguars right now.
Mm-hmm.
And not for this year, but I am really interested to see what the Chargers are going to do with Harbaugh.
Yeah, that's true. We can't overlook that. They've got a
coach now that understands.
Mm-hmm. Been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah, he's been to a Super Bowl. He just won a national championship in college. He's had success at both levels.
He's got a quarterback.
Exactly. He's got a quarterback that they have put a lot of money into, and now do they build that team around him, and can he coach him better than anybody's ever coached him? And I think he probably can.
Yeah.
I don't think the Chargers have ever had a better coach than Jim Harbaugh. With Justin Herbert for sure is their quarterback, and so I'm very interested. I hate it because it's in the AFC West, but I like challengers.
Sure.
Chiefs aren't going to be worried about, and I'm not.
Sean
worried.
Payton came to town.
I'm not worried about it as a Chiefs fan, but it's going to be interesting to see. I think what the Chargers do with Harbaugh, and like I said, I don't think that's going to be this year,
right,
or this coming year, but
it could.
It very well could if they make the right moves and get the right people in the draft and hit on some guys.
Mm-hmm.
It could very well be this year. This coming year, and they could be ready to go.
No, I agree. Most game-winning touchdown passes in the fourth quarter are overtime in NFL playoff history. Joe Montana's first with 4, second Kurt Warner, Patrick Mahomes, Terry Bradshaw, and Tom Brady. Mahomes is already there with second on the list. He's third in playoff wins. He's only the third quarterback with 3 Super Bowl MVPs. He's only the third quarterback with 3 Super Bowl rings. And he's only 28. The parade is tomorrow, by the way, on Valentine's Day. So take your Valentine and mingle among the million of people that are expected to be involved in the parade somehow, in some way. Here's another thing, too. You can talk about the Chiefs. You know, Trent McDuffie had an amazing game. You look at his numbers, the Pro Football Focus ratings. Trent McDuffie is 22. And remember that pass to Deebo Samuel where McDuffie knocked it down in the end zone? That was a great play.
Oh,
if you see that play from start to finish from the snap, it's amazing he stayed with the guy. And, you know, also, Nick Allegretti did a nice job at left guard. A lot of people didn't really talk much about him. But think about this for a second. You could argue this. I'm not saying it's true, but you could argue this. You could argue that the best defensive player the Chiefs have is Trent McDuffie. Now, I know there's Nick Bolton. I know there's Jadarius Sneed, and obviously I'm aware of Chris Jones. But you could argue that Trent McDuffie is their best defensive player. He can cover. He can cause turnovers, as he did against Tyreek in Germany. And he can tackle. And he can also blitz, and he's a very good blitzer. He's 22. That might be the face of your defense for the next 5 to 6 years or longer. Mm-hmm. And here's the ironic part of it all. Who did the Chiefs trade up to get Patrick Mahomes, but who did they trade with to move up 17 spots?
The Bills.
Who did the Chiefs jump over when they traded up to get Trent McDuffie last year?
The Bills.
They have the video, the war room. The Bills wanted Trent McDuffie. They were planning on taking Trent McDuffie. The Chiefs were aware that the Bills were interested in Trent McDuffie, and the Chiefs were sold on Trent McDuffie as a guy he's worth trading up for to get, like they did with Patrick Mahomes. Once again, Brett Veach, I love you, man, because they outfoxed the Bills not once but twice over these years. Now, technically, John Dorsey was the GM at the time they traded up and got Patrick Mahomes. But it was Brett Veach that was all over the Mahomes wagon when Mahomes was a freshman in college. So this is, you know, Brett Veach created all of this about selling everybody on Mahomes. and they draft Mahomes and move up 17 spots. They moved up to get Trent McDuffie. Those are two. You know, you think about it. The face of the offense is Mahomes, but the face of the defense, quite honestly, starting next year is Trent McDuffie. Listen, Chris Jones is going to want a ton of money, as we know. Mm-hmm. I don't think it makes sense for the Chiefs to bring Chris Jones back at the amount he wants. Okay? Legarius Sneed, they've drafted to where they've got enough corners, and they could always pick up somebody else. That if Sneed's price is too high, they could walk from Sneed. And by the way, they could tag him too. Okay? Mm-hmm. So it is conceivable. It is, and I think Willie Gay is going to walk. I think they'll keep either Gay or Tranquil, and I think they'll keep Tranquil. And then you got Bolton, so you're going to more than likely lose Gay. But the Chiefs, the face of their offense obviously is Mahomes. The face of the defense could very well be McDuffie, and both of them they traded up significantly to go get. And those would be the faces of both the offense and the defense. And McDuffie's only 22, and in the Super Bowl, 40 coverage snaps, 7 targets, he allowed 9 yards and no first downs in the biggest game of his career. It's pretty impressive. It is very conceivable that the Chiefs do not have Chris Jones or Legarius Sneed on this team next year. It is possible. Mm-hmm. Now, does that hurt the defense? Well, of course it hurts the defense on paper. No doubt. And Chris Jones saved a few touchdowns with getting just enough pressure in the Super Bowl and in playoff games this year. But I go back to you really couldn't give Tyreek Hill $30 million a year. It made sense to trade him, and we know that worked out great. I think there is a parallel here that as much as we love Chris Jones, and we know there's only one Tyreek Hill, right? And there's only certain three or four defensive tackles as good as Chris Jones. Those guys are hard to find. They're not a dime a dozen. They're hard to find. And you know, shutdown corners are usually hard to find too. But the Chiefs have found them. Okay, they found some pretty good ones over the years, and they picked up the right safeties like Justin Reed and Tyrann Mathieu in free agency. So they've been able to draft enough corners where they have different corners that can maybe step into the role of Sneed, even though I love having Sneed on the team, don't get me wrong. It's probably easier to play Sneed than it is Chris Jones. But Chris Jones is older. He's 30, I think 30 now. So the question is, do you try to re-sign Chris Jones? And I'm sure they might try, but I think that ship sailed when they didn't get to sign before this year. So I think, and here's what somebody was talking about yesterday. It sounds really weird to say, but is it, people say, what's the motivation for the Chiefs? The Chiefs' motivation, Kelce and Mahomes have already stated it, to be the first NFL team to three-peat. And in order to three-peat, you got to go back-to-back first. And no NFL team has ever won 3 Super Bowls in a row. It's never been done. The Chiefs could do something nobody's ever done before. And it will be the only time in their history, these players that come back next year, this is the only time they'll ever have this opportunity. So there is ample motivation. And I would say the only guy that would have another chance at a three-peat, possibly Mahomes later in his career. But that's highly doubtful. So the Chiefs already know what happened when they let it slip through their hands when they were trying to go back-to-back the first time. They didn't let it slip through their hands this time. They are extremely motivated, already talking about three-peating, which I think is great because it motivates you. You have a goal. Because it could be, you know, if they lost this game, it'd be like, okay, there goes the back-to-back. And who knows? They have a hangover. You know, the Super Bowl losers have hangovers typically, and they might not have done so well next year. And here, they have a chance to do something that, you know, Kelce's excited about the opportunity. He's coming back. Andy Reid was never going to retire. Mike Florio's an idiot. And so Reed's coming back. Mahomes is coming back. The question then is, the talk of a three-peat, as I said yesterday, puts more pressure on everybody. Maybe you don't get to enjoy this one as much. But at the same time, it's a good thing because there's still motivation to do something that nobody had ever done before. They are in rare air. They're one of only 5 NFL franchises, I believe it is, that has a chance to three-peat. The Patriots did, the Cowboys had a chance, the Steelers, and the Niners. So you have a chance right now to win 3 in a row. So there's tremendous motivation. Here is the question I have. And I think I know the answer, and I hope the answer that I'm thinking is what's going to happen. The Kansas City Chiefs could have easily said, we will pay Tyreek whatever he wants, because he's a rare player. And that would have handcuffed them for the next few years. And they could have been like, we got to win it right away again.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, the Chiefs looked long-term. And they said, listen, we want to win championships for an extended period of time. It doesn't make sense for us to pay $30 million to a wide receiver. We're going to go ahead and trade him. We're going to get all kinds of draft capital. And then we're going to have plan B. And we're going to build this team. And we might look a little bit different. And that was the start of the metamorphosis, as I said, of this team and their identity. And it worked out fine, didn't it? Back-to-back. Yes. Without Tyreek Hill, the Chiefs are perfect. Think about that. Without Tyreek Hill, the Chiefs have won Super Bowls both years without Tyreek Hill. So let's stop with we have to have Tyreek Hill. And by the way, you're a moron if you sit here and say, well, Tyreek Hill, you had this if we still had Tyreek Hill, imagine, I mean, we would have blown out the Niners. Yeah, you also wouldn't have Trent McDuffie and a whole bunch of other players, okay? So you don't know much about football when you say those things. But here's my question. Should we be concerned at all that the Chiefs mortgage some of that championship window to do something that nobody's ever done before? And here's my point. You want a three-peat. Chris Jones already advocated on ESPN's set after the game. They mentioned three-peat, and he said, we got something special here. I hope we can keep it together. And, you know, he wants to be back to go run it, you know, get a three-peat.
Who wouldn't want to?
Right, who wouldn't want to? But is Chris Jones going to take a significant discount to make it work? And the answer is no.
Based on the past offseason, no.
And I don't blame him.
Absolutely not.
I don't blame him. But if he truly wants to be part of history, and he already is, so he's got back-to-back. But if he truly wants to be a part of a three-peat, then he'll take less money. If he truly does, he'll take less money because it'll help their chances of getting a three-peat. If he's about getting his money, which I don't blame him.
No.
He should, because he didn't get it this year, and he's 30-31. He needs to get it. This is his last big deal he's going to get. I don't blame Chris Jones at all for telling the Chiefs he wants $30 to $35 million a year or whatever he wants. I don't blame him. He has a right to ask for it, and some people would argue he's deserving of it. Did the Chiefs win the Super Bowl this year without Chris Jones? I would argue they probably don't. I think you could argue that. Of course, you don't know who's in his place and so forth and so on. Legarius Sneed. You throw a lot of money at him to keep him and extend him, or do you trade him or franchise tag him or let him walk, whatever the case may be? The question I have is, now that you have a chance to go for the three-peat, does Brett Veach and the Chiefs say, man, we may never get this chance again, and yeah, we're taking a chance that our window, we mortgage 2025 or 2026 by giving Jones a huge backloaded contract to go get the three-peat, and yeah, we give Sneed his money, and then they're a little bit thin, but they're like, well, but everybody's pretty young on that defense, and we're going to be in pretty good shape bringing everybody back, and we still got 15. And then what does that do in regards to trying to go find a pretty good wide receiver? Do you have the flexibility with your cap? If you give Jones a big deal and Sneed you extend, are you going to have the dollars to go get a pretty decent wideout to add to your wide receiver room? Because after Rashee Rice, there's tons of questions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Justin Watson, he's a nice little utility piece. MBS is not a number one or number two in this league. I mean, you're not counting on Sky Moore, Kadarius Toney, and Mecole Hardman's a gadget player. So the Chiefs need to have money to spend to improve the wide receiver room, unless they're going to draft a whole bunch of wide receivers like they did the one year when they drafted a whole bunch of corners. Maybe that's what they're going to do. But my question to you, Dusty, and I, like I said, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm interested in what your input is before I answer my own question. Is it possible that the Chiefs are wanting to make that history and get the three-peat, that they mortgage a year or two down the line short-term to be all in to get the three-peat? Or do you think the Chiefs will stick with what they did with Tyreek Hill, and that is, hey, man, you're asking for too much. We will give you 28, but we're not giving you 30 a year. Chris Jones, we'll give you a good deal, but it ain't going to be as much as you want. Legarius Sneed, if it's too much, we're going to have to move on from you. And then they have a little bit more flexibility, obviously, like they did with Tyreek Hill, to maybe it's Bolton you extend. And then you go get a T. Higgins or a Michael Pittman or whoever it might be to add your wide receiver core. What do you think?
I think there's definitely a chance that they would take that route of, hey, this has never been done before. Let's sign these dudes, mm-hmm. because we are We're a dynasty now.
And we got this unbelievable defense.
This isn't something we need on our label anymore. We've got that on the label. We are a dynasty now. Mm-hmm. And I think there would be like a propensity, I guess, to go ahead and do that because we've already done the dynasty thing. Now, obviously, they've not done that in the past because, you know, there's that question mark, is this a dynasty?
Right.
And I think that gives you a little bit of leeway with not only yourself and your own mind, but also with your fans of, hey, let's try to do something that's never been done before and go ahead and go all in. And there's a chance that that could be the thinking. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's going to happen because I think Brett Veach, no matter what the situation is, whether it's a dynasty or whether he's trying to get his first Super Bowl, has the same mindset with a quarterback that he's got locked in for a decade. It's not a decade right now, but you know my point.
Right.
you got that guy locked in, let's get as many as we can. It doesn't have to be three in a row. It doesn't have to be two here. It doesn't have to be back-to-back. However it works, though, let's just get as many as we can. And I think that the mindset that he's shown would show that that's not what he's going to do in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
And the mindset that he's always had would not jive with this of just chips all in, like Dayton Moore in 2015, right?
Right.
Go get whatever, anybody, whoever you need, because this is our window. And it's not really a window. This is our time. Mm-hmm. It's right now.
Right.
And that's not the case with the Chiefs. That's not how Brett Veach has ever operated with the Chiefs. And so I don't think that's going to happen. If you ask me what I think is going to happen, mm-hmm. I think they're going to let Jones walk unless he takes a cut, right?
Like, and they will get I believe they do get a compensation pick. I think it might be a third-round pick, which,
yeah,
you know, you would want more than a third round for that talent, but at least you get a pick.
Unless he decides to become Travis Kelce in his mindset and be underpaid, mm-hmm. he's walking.
I
think they're going to tag Snead. I think Snead's going to be part of this team next year.
I agree with
and
you.
Get tagged, and then they'll figure out what they want to do with Bolton or something like that. I agree with you. I think Gay will probably walk because he'll get more money somewhere else.
I think Tranquil's a guy that'll
have that. I think there's a purpose, not only to have an insurance policy that they signed Tranquil, but also for the future if they needed him to step in and be a starter.
Yeah.
When one of those two young linebackers is going to leave. And if I'm picking somebody between those two, it's Bolton to extend, you know, and to give the money to and offer the money to. So I think this guy's always thinking ahead of everything. And that's why they won three out of the last five Super Bowls. Because this guy's always thinking ahead. Mm-hmm. And us fans are not making the decisions and being upset that once in a lifetime you think receiver got traded.
Right. I believe Mike Dana is a free agent. He detailed off a little bit towards the end of the year, but he might get a pretty decent offer. And if so, I think the Chiefs are prepared for that, and they'll let him walk because you got Felix who you drafted.
Exactly,
and, you know, that's the guy that they've kind of like Mahomes. He didn't do much his first year, didn't play hardly at all, and got a few snaps early in the year when Omenihu will be back. You know, remember that.
Yeah.
He's on a two-year deal. So Omenihu, Karlaftis, you still got two edge rushers, if he comes back from the ACL, of course, Omenihu. And you can maybe draft another pass rusher or find somebody in free agency. And so it goes back to, you know, if you can save yourself a whole bunch of money and Chris Jones, you let him walk, you get a compensation draft pick, you get the salary cap flexibility. Now, the only bad thing, the one thing that's a lot different than the Tyreek Hill situation is that you're not going to get the draft haul.
You're not getting anything.
You're not going to get.
I mean, compensation third round.
Right. You're not going to, unless you can somehow trade him, you're not going to get the draft capital you got for Tyreek Hill. Tyreek was younger, more in his prime. Chris Jones, he's 30, if I remember correctly. So you're probably not going to get nearly as much draft capital, but you will get salary cap flexibility without question. But it also makes you worse as a team. I mean, you lose a guy like Chris Jones, that does make you worse. And I think this is just me. I think it's easier to find wide receivers and you can split up things, you know, and change your scheme offensively to where, you know, you can scheme it up and get Noah Gray more catches. You know, when you lose Tyreek Hill, you brought in a Juju, you bring in an MVS and, the, you know, Justin Watson, and you got some different guys you can throw to, right? You draft this guy more. I think it's harder to do with a guy like Chris Jones. I mean, you got a whole bunch of guys you can get different, more snaps to, but for a guy to disrupt in the middle, because the Chiefs have always seemed to have somebody off the edge that can get to the quarterback. Frank Clark, Derek Thomas, Neil Smith, we can go back in the day, you know. Many who can get to the quarterback, Karlaftis can. And the other thing that people don't understand about Chris Jones not being on this team And I know that I've been critical of Chris Jones at times over the years because he really didn't do enough until he finally, the Chiefs won their first Super Bowl. That's when he finally started to step up a little bit. And then he finally got some sacks for the first time in his career in the postseason last year. But one of the things that I've kept a close eye on, and Karlaftis has talked about this and others, is that Chris Jones's value is hard to quantify for some fans because wide receiver is obvious, right? You make the catches, you've got the stats, you got the touchdowns, yards per catch. The only number to value when you look at a defensive lineman is sacks. But if you're a defensive tackle, you usually don't get nearly as many sacks as a defensive end. Granted, he played at D end at times this year. We saw the experiment where he was going to play D end all the time. That didn't work out so well. Mm-hmm. He's a D tackle who can hybrid into a D end at times. But here's, you know, one thing that's documented is amount of pressures. He once again was one of the best guys with the most amount of pressures per snaps that he played. One of the top dogs this year. He had 10.5 sacks, but he had a ton of pressures. And pressures, even though he doesn't get credit for a sack, how many of those pressures forced turnovers, forced a fourth and long, third and long, or, as we saw in the Super Bowl and in the playoffs, prevented a quarterback from having one more second to throw a touchdown pass. There is no stat, they don't keep it, they don't have it yet, showing touchdown save due to pass rush pressure.
Yeah.
It is a stat that nobody has. So it is easy to quantify and say, well, this wide receiver we got to have, look at his numbers. Or, well, we can't lose Tyreek Hill, but we can't do that. Look at all the numbers we're going to lose. But we can lose Chris Jones. He only had 10 sacks. See, and here's the other part to add to this list to think about. So I'm talking about actual pressure. I'm talking about sacks, yes. But here's the third component that a lot of people, the regular football fan, does not understand. And honestly, I'm understanding way better the last 5 years. And that is, how much does Chris Jones' presence allow George Karlaftis to get 10 sacks?
Absolutely.
How many sacks does Charles Omenihu get and Mike Dana because of Chris Jones' presence?
Frank Clark, how many, ate in this defense,
yes, he did,
because of Chris Jones.
Exactly right. How many linebackers don't get blocked so they can make more? Well, look at Nick Bolton. How many tackles does Nick Bolton get without Chris Jones in the middle? I mean, suddenly, if you can discard a guy and Chris Jones isn't a threat, you don't have a great guy to replace Chris Jones, you can now get a lineman on your linebacker. He ain't going to make as many tackles, and guess what? You're going to be worse against the run. And I'm not saying Chris Jones was great against the run, but he is a threat. You always have to account for him. And the fact that you have to double-team Chris Jones quite a bit frees up other people. You lose Chris Jones, you let him walk, you don't sign him to the big deal. I totally get it financially. I totally get it long-term in regards to the window of championships. But you can make a damn good argument that Chris Jones is worth every penny because of sacks is nice. That's a stat you can look at. Pressures, you now kind of have a stat that people keep track of that. But what is not quantified, and I guarantee his agent tries to prove this to people, but it's harder to prove and show, and that is all these other guys eat better because Mr. Jones takes on double teams, and that opens up other people. He doesn't get to go one-on-one like Karlaftis all the time. Now, suddenly, what happens? You lose Chris Jones, and you let him walk, and you get the salary cap flexibility that you want, which is great, and you get a compensation third-round pick. Let's say that's the best they do draft-wise. Okay, fine. No Chris Jones. Does that mean you double Karlaftis? You double Karlaftis, now he doesn't get sacks. Omenihu doesn't come back from his torn ACL. He probably going to have to miss part of next season. Now all of a sudden you have zero pass rush. Now we sit here and talk about how great the secondary
is.
We talk about how great the secondary is, and it is really good, but I don't care how dang good your secondary is. You ain't going to be able to cover for 8 seconds very well. So, and if you blitz, you're going to burn even more because you got blitz more because you don't. And we've seen Spags have to do that some years where the Chiefs pass rush wasn't as good, yeah, or Chris Jones was out or you know, whatever. So that's something to keep in mind. And I guarantee his agent is telling everybody that wants him, hey, man, this is what he brings to the table. Chris Jones is going to bring you 10 sacks. maybe more. He's going to, he's got a championship pedigree. He's got experience. He's a leader on defense. He's going to get so many pressures. He's going to get a high pressure percentage with the snaps he's on the field. He makes plays whether he gets a quarterback or not. And if he doesn't get pressure or sacks, you're going to probably have a double team, which frees up somebody else. And if you're an NFL team that has a couple of promising pass rushers off the edge, Chris Jones would be the perfect fit for you.
Oh, for sure.
Now, the question is, anybody going to give Jones as much money as he wants? And I don't know because of his age. I don't know. So I go back and forth. I understand if the Chiefs... I'm going to go with Veach, I trust. I've said this for a couple years.
Oh, for
now.
Sure.
Yeah. Veach, I trust. If Brett Veach determines that Chris Jones should have $35 million a year, and he says, okay, Chris Jones, here it is, or you're going to say $30 million a year with incentives up to 35 to 40, whatever it is. If Brett Veach decides to re-sign Chris Jones, I'm not going to get on this show and chastise Brett Veach for making that decision, because I guarantee you there's many, many sound reasons why he did what he did, including the ones I just presented, and there's many others I didn't. And if he walks from Chris Jones, I will support it as well, because, and I do think that makes a little bit more sense to walk from him. But if he do re-sign Chris Jones, I can't sit here and say that's a moronic move.
No.
Based on what Jones has done. I think the only reason you would really waffle at it might be that he's on the north side of 30 now instead of 27.
Yeah, for sure.
And then how many times do you wait a year before you sign a guy and you say the year too late? And John Dorsey was known for that. Wait a year too long. Like Justin Houston was a great example of that.
And was not a numbers guy.
No, was not a numbers guy. Now, speaking of numbers, we end the show with this. So why were the Chiefs so successful against the Niners? You know, Deebo Samuel had 3 catches for 33, Brandon Ayuk 3 for 49, Kittle had 2 for 4 yards. The Chiefs held him to 19 points during regulation. Why were the Chiefs so successful? Well, it starts back to Trent McDuffie and LeJarius Sneed. The Chiefs in this game, 64% of the time played man-to-man coverage. It's the most man-to-man coverage the Chiefs played in a game all year long. And think about it. The Niners maybe had the most offensive weapons they had to deal with all year long.
It doesn't add up to be a smart move to play that much man-to-man coverage, right?
No. But I will say this.
It was.
This goes back to Chris Jones I was just talking about. If you don't have Chris Jones on the field, I don't think you play man 64% of the time. So that changes what Spags wants to do next year, right? Cover 1, 41% of the time. And they went cover 0 21% of the time. No team, I've got the whole spreadsheet in front of me. There's only two teams that did cover 0 in double digits in percentage. The Giants did it 18% of the time. The Eagles 13%. The Chiefs 21% of the time went cover 0. Way more than Niners have ever seen in a game this year. Mm-hmm. So that was Spags being Spags. Cover 1 was the second most that the Niners had seen all year long. Man-to-man was the second most at 64% they've seen all year long. You know the game where they saw more man-to-man coverage and more cover one than the Super Bowl against the Chiefs, the Niners offense? You know who it was against?
The Ravens.
The Cleveland Browns, and the Browns beat them.
Yeah, they did.
Missed a field goal at the end of the game. Did the Niners to lose that game. It's like they took the Cleveland Browns game plan, which they have Myles Garrett, an outstanding pass rusher. Chris Jones, outstanding pass rusher. Kolaftis, pretty good too. They took Cleveland's game plan, and they just took it up a level. And you can do that when you have a really great pass rusher and or corners that can play man-to-man.
Corners,
and the Chiefs don't have one. They had two.
Yeah.
Spags has the bullets in the gun to fire it. You take away Chris Jones, he has less bullets in his gun to fire next year. And that's another reason why you could say and argue maybe the Chiefs should give him his money and go from there. To be upfront, I think the plausible, smart thing to do for the Chiefs, if they want to keep their window open, and it might end up hurting your chance. It might cost you getting a three-peat. It might. Mm-hmm. But do you want a three-peat? Do you want four rings and a three-peat, or do you want 6 or 7 rings over Mahomes' career? And this is me. This is simple math. Trigo Community High School education kicks in for me here in my Pittsburgh State degree. I believe 6 is better than 4. I believe 7's better than 4. Three in a row is nice, but even with three in a row and you end with four, if I can get three in, out of 5 years from 2026 to 2031, I get three more. Six would be more than four.
Yeah.
So I still come out ahead. It's just that I don't have them in the bunching to make history with a three-peat. But I've already made history because I'm one of five to get back-to-backs now. So the three-peat's important. But is it important enough to mortgage and close the championship window with 15 at quarterback who's in his prime at 28? And my answer is no. And that's why I think the Chiefs will do the right thing, which I think is the right thing. I may be wrong.
That's
to walk from Chris Jones, or don't give him everything he wants, or try to somehow incentive-laced deal where he will somehow take a discount. I don't think he will. But then again, it takes somebody else to really throw a lot of money at Chris Jones. Maybe what we're missing here is that Chris Jones is 30 years old, and people say, you know what? He has wear and tear on his body. He's had to play long postseasons for 5 years in a row, right? And they may look at Chris Jones and they may say, the market may actually not be as good as he thinks it is, and the market may come back to the Chiefs. The only problem is they've got to make a decision by a certain point in time, don't they? Here in a few days, I think they got to make a decision on his contract with the – I have to look it up. There's something that the Chiefs have to make a decision on within the next week or two with Chris Jones.
It's probably something like the amount of dollars that they could give him or something like that without
– right.
You know, letting him go through the whole process, right, of the free agency deal.
And by the way, Chris Jones is technically 29, but he's going to be 30 soon. So he's technically 29. But the Chris Jones decision is a big one. And it may help you get a three-peat, but it may prevent you from winning some Super Bowls after that, possibly. I'm trying to see here if I can find out. The Chiefs have a little over $24 million in cap space at the moment. If they franchise tagged Chris Jones, it would cost them more than $32 million. And that really hurts you in regards to the cap, how I understand it. He was doubled. Chris Jones was doubled, a league high 72% this year, and still had a 20% pass rush win rate. Those guys are hard to find. So, I don't have the number here on. There was something I read the other day about his contract that they've got to decide something here shortly after the Super Bowl. I don't know if that just is how it would set up what they can offer down the line, or I'd forgot how it all worked. I have to research a little bit more. I don't want to say something that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But the big decision the Chiefs have to handle are looming very quickly right after the Super Bowl, and Chris Jones at the top of that list. And how the Chiefs handle Chris Jones may very well end up being just as important as how they handled the Tyreek Hill situation. And as we know, they came out smelling like a rose, unlike what people thought at the time. We tried to tell you on this show that it was a blessing in disguise. Chris Jones, would it be a blessing in disguise if the Chiefs walked away from him? And maybe they can still get a three-peat. People didn't think they could win without Tyreek Hill. They did. Maybe they can win a three-peat without Chris Jones. It will depend on what you do to replace him.
Yeah.
Or how you shift into another metamorphosis of a team. We don't know what that plan is. But I will tell you this. I can assure you, if the Chiefs had a plan for overtime back in July with the new overtime rules, the Chiefs have a plan A, a plan B, and at least a plan C on how they're going to attack the offseason, all hinging on whether they're bringing Jones back, whether they're going to tag him, or whether they're going to let him walk. The Chiefs have contingency plans left and right. I can assure you of that. The question is, which one of those plans will they have to enact?
Yeah. The easiest thing I would bet on here is that he's not getting tagged.
No, I think
like
I think
you can talk about that in that story, right?
I agree.
But it's like they're not tagging Chris, not again. Like that's we're way past the.
It's not really good for either one.
Chris Jones, exactly. Mm-hmm. And continue to do that to the guy when you know he's done a lot of things for you. You're not going to leave him in limbo on a tag. Now Snead's young, and that's why I feel like they may tag him. He's obviously going to get more money than he might want to pay a corner at that time. But if you're not paying Chris Jones and he walks, then I think there's an easier way to go ahead and tag Snead, keep him on this team, keep your corner solid, because you're not going to have maybe the pass rush that you're hoping to have. And maybe you'll find somebody in the draft or somebody that can, you know, fill those spots. But these guys don't, like you said, they're not a dime dozen. They don't grow on trees.
No.
Your Aaron Donalds and your Chris Joneses are rare in the NFL to impact the game like they do at a defensive tackle position. Like you said, there's so many guys that you can think of that have been edge rushers in this league. But it all comes down to a skill set, too, of whether you have a tackle or an edge rusher. That's what makes your line so good, right? Like,
right.
You've got to have one of those dudes that's just a standout, and if you do, it's going to make your life a lot easier as a defensive coordinator, as an entire defense and a unit that's playing and trying to have success, if you can have that guy in there. So, they're not tagging Chris Jones.
Right. Okay, so I found it. Modifications are made to Chris Jones' remaining 2023 contract year, with 2024 through the 2027 years voiding 10 days following the Super Bowl. So February 21st is that deadline, okay? So the window to exercise the option is 7 days, beginning a day after the Super Bowl on February 12th and ending 7 days after the Super Bowl on February 18th. There is a provision designed to force the Chiefs to pick up the option, okay? It was done that way because the $7.75 million would have been classified as likely to be earned in incentives when the entire amount counted against the Chiefs' cap. So it's all about the cap, of course, as we keep saying to people. His cap number in 2023 was $26.8 million, which was the league's sixth highest for the season. So people talk about the high cap hit that Mahomes had, but they had a big cap hit with Jones as well. So now the question is, are they going to go with a historic franchise tag, which I doubt, which would be $32.1 million? But they're going to have to do a lot of reshuffling, so forth and so on, to get Jones signed at what he probably wants. And then the question is, of course, the discount, so forth and so on. You know, the Bosa and Donald contracts averaged 8 years. They averaged $33 million a year. So the target price for Jones would be, on a four-year deal, would be $132 million over 4 years. Okay? Guaranteed money, be looking at 72.5, $90 million overall in guarantees would be in line with the contracts that Donald and Myles Garrett and Nick Bosa and Myles Garrett have had. So that's what we're looking at. The Chiefs are going to do something long term with this, with Chris Jones, it's going to be, you know, probably $130 million or north of that at $32 to $35 million a year. And how do you make that work when you already have a quarterback with a big cap hit that continues to escalate? Mm-hmm. You can reshuffle and restructure so many contracts, eventually you run out of reshuffling. And then on top of that, if you want to, you know, sneed, so that complicates. And you want to improve the wide receiver room. The math for me, this is just me, and I don't know all the math. It just doesn't add up to the Chiefs can address other issues as much as they want and keep Chris Jones.
It's what it comes down to in the business side of it is – you're going to have to make some concessions. It's built that way.
Right.
In every sport except baseball, it's built that way to put you in a spot where, yeah, this is not responsible here to do this if we want to keep winning.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not the one that makes that decision, thankfully. So Brett Veach gets to do that. And again, there's never been anything that he's done yet that said he's not equipped and capable of making this decision. And whatever that decision is, it's hard not to be like, well, I trust it, no matter what he does, even if he does sign Chris Jones to a long-term deal. Not long-term, whatever.
Be no more than 4 or 5 years. Deal, so, you know? His last deal was 4 years until
this
year.
So whatever it is.
He'll be 30 on July 3rd, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd be interesting to see what the market would be. The thing is, what I don't understand is, would he... if he got into the open market, the Chiefs are pretty much done, aren't they? Because they only have so much time to negotiate, and then they lose the rights to, once he becomes a full-fledged free agent, is usually what happens.
Yeah.
He got so much time to, you know, once he goes free agency, then it's okay, I get my compensation pick, and you let him walk.
Yeah.
So you've got to get it done. So the question then would be, how do you know what offers would be out there for Chris Jones?
Mm-hmm.
That's the part I don't fully understand.
But. No, all the arbitrary deadlines and all that stuff that just like gets shoved into a contract. I have no idea how it all works.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to spend time figuring it out. That's what Brett Veach is.
That's why I'm Vin Veach I trust, baby. But the Chiefs definitely have some big decisions to make, as every team usually does, whether they lose or win the Super Bowl. But all I know is the most important guy they need is signed long term. And that, of course, is Patrick Mahomes.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.